First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
The Jaguars are on a roll, and more of your money is rolling right into the sports complex to pay for improvements around the stadium. Good morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, why the city is giving Shad Khan even more taxpayer money to build out the sports complex. Then later, a special live in-studio performance by Paul Wayne. Now, he's the Duval guitar hero who went viral after performing the national anthem at last week's exciting Jaguars game that saw them into the playoffs. That and more ahead, but first this hour, as excitement builds for the Jaguars game coming up this weekend, city leaders are approving hundreds of millions of your money to improve the downtown sports complex. This week, City Council okayed a redrafted $129.75 million incentives deal with Jaguars owner Shad Khan's development company. Khan wants to build a Four Seasons hotel and office building on the downtown North Bank riverfront. Now, his firm, Iguana Investments, asked the city to amend the original agreement that was first approved last year to increase the cap on the deal's property tax refunds. The project's cost has gone up more than 20%. And guess what, folks? There's a clawback. The city could take back millions of dollars in taxpayer money if Khan does not follow through with a Four Seasons hotel going up on the St. Johns River. There is so much to talk about when it comes to the ins and outs of this deal. David Bauerlein has been covering the story from the outset for the Florida Times Union, and he's here now in studio. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. Our phones are down today, folks. We're trying to get that fixed. Oh, actually, they're working again. Oh, good. Okay, so the number is 549-2937. Now, folks, polls consistently show that as much as you all love the Jaguars, you do not like taxpayer money in large amounts going toward stadium improvements and other deals like that. So what do you think about this deal? More than $129 million going to Shad Khan's company to build the Four Seasons and other structures around the stadium. What do you think? 549-2937, give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInjax. David, let's begin with the amount that is being approved for the Jaguars. $129 million and change. Tell us about it.
So it's basically broken into three different categories. One category is money that would go towards building a new marina, pier, riverwalk, things that the public would have access to, and that you might argue one way or the other whether the cost of those, but they are sort of, quote, public amenities. And the Jaguars would be building those on behalf of the city. Mm-hmm. Then another portion of it would be something they call REV grants. I call them property tax rebates. It just means that the value of new development is going to generate taxes for the city. And then over a 20-year period, 75% of those property taxes that are new to the city would go back to Khan and his investment company. And that's about $59 million over that 20 years. Mm. And then the third part is this, quote, completion grant, which it's kind of like, I kind of compare it to your child gets a really good report card and you go get him an ice cream cone. It's basically saying, okay, way to go, great job, and here's $26 million for completing this project as promised. And that's an upfront, one-time cash payment after the project is completed. And that has not changed since the original deal. That's still the same. What has changed is what you mentioned, Melissa, which is that completion grant. If it does not remain a Four Seasons hotel for at least 5 years, then each year of some of that completion grant would have to be paid back by Khan's investment firm. So that's what the city council added to this deal this time around.
A clawback. And let's talk about that, because there's so much skepticism about this deal, whether the Four Seasons will actually ever open its doors on our downtown riverfront. You even note that members of the city council are expressing skepticism about that. Here's a quote you have from Councilmember Ron Salem. "This is a significant issue. I have people come to me frequently saying, it's not going to be a Four Seasons. You're going to get bamboozled."
Right. And that's what they're hearing. And part of the reason that it's out there is that we have not yet heard the Four Seasons Corporation itself saying that they are going to put a Four Seasons flag on a hotel in Jacksonville. And it's been, a year and a half, 2 years since this first kind of came up is what Khan's plan was there. So until and unless that happens, there is going to be some skepticism. The Jaguars have repeatedly said that, yes, it is going to be a Four Seasons. The deal itself has Four Seasons in it by name. This is what city council members are hearing. And so they are responding to that for sure out there with some skepticism in the community about whether it is. And let's face it, the one reason why this deal is getting so much interest and such a large completion grant, for instance, is the Four Seasons is new to the market. It's a big, mm-hmm. high prestige one. It's mm-hmm. bragging rights. So if it's not going to be a Four Seasons, there's a concern it would be a bait and switch where taxpayers put up a lot of money and get something that's a nice hotel, but not the same kind of attention grabber that a Four Seasons is coming to Jacksonville might have.
We did reach out to the Jaguars about the deal. They didn't have anyone available to speak with us. They said they're focusing on the playoffs, which we'll talk about in a minute. But they did send us this statement. This is from Shad Khan's Iguana Investments, a spokesperson for that company, saying, "We're grateful to the city council for their approval of the revised Shipyards redevelopment agreement. These changes address key site-specific issues and account for disruptions in the global supply chain, while still providing an increased return on investment to the city. The continued collaboration between Iguana, the City of Jacks, and the Downtown Investment Authority on this project is emblematic of our shared vision for the future of downtown Jacksonville." Of course, let's talk about the key phrase in there. This is, they say, providing an increased return on investment to the city. That's where the skepticism comes in from taxpayers who want to make sure that their taxpayer money will see an ROI. Let's talk about how they measure that, David, how the Downtown Investment Authority and other players, how they're measuring that this big outlay to Khan is going to pay off for Jacksonville in terms of revenue coming into that sports complex, people coming down, spending money, supporting businesses. That's the goal, of course.
Well, absolutely. And the return on investment has gone up based on the calculations the Downtown Investment Authority does. I think the simplest way to explain it is simply that if the Jaguars are spending more money to build the Four Seasons, the assumption is it's going to be on the tax rolls at more taxable property value. And so the city's going to get more tax dollars from this development.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has driven up the return on investment for the city. Basically, I think it's over $1 of benefit for each $1 of tax incentive. So now, mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways to slice and dice those particular things, Melissa, but that would be the argument, is that the tax revenue from this Four Seasons would offset the expense to taxpayers of incentivizing it.
549-2937. Give us a call as we talk about the new amended deal, giving Jaguars owner Shad Khan major ducats, more than $129 million for a Four Seasons hotel and other improvements around the stadium. Of course, the Jaguars are in the playoffs. There is so much excitement about that. We want to hear from you, football fans and voters. 549-2937. Sharon on JTB. Go ahead, Sharon.
Good morning. I definitely support giving the money to Shad Khan and the Jaguars. I think it's a great investment in our city. It will provide jobs, opportunities. And for the people who live here who do not support Florida football, maybe they could add some money or provisions to other sports and make it a win-win for everybody.
All right, Sharon, thanks. And, that's the whole argument in favor of this deal, David, for people who've complained for years that there's nothing going on downtown, nothing going on along the waterfront. The rationale for these incentives is well, this is how we get that. This is where we get the excitement and the foot traffic and the money coming in to the sports complex.
Well, yeah, that's how you get downtown development, rev up the sports complex. So more people want to go down there. There's more restaurants, for instance, or hotels, or it's kind of its own center of activity down there, connected with the Riverwalk, which has been long overdue to connect it to the rest of downtown. And, you know, that it's, yes, it's very expensive in terms of the incentives, but the public benefits by having amenities that draw people into downtown, and that generates excitement in downtown overall. That's the basic argument behind, you know, cashing out these very large incentives that you would not clearly get if you were building a Four Seasons hotel at the beach or on the south side, for instance.
The other side of it, of course, is people think that money could be better spent on other initiatives. Here's a tweet from Peter. Why are we still giving handouts to millionaire investors who don't even live here? When will we invest more in local families? He says.
Right. So that's the clear argument, which is where the priorities in terms of what's the most important for the city's development of Four Seasons that caters to a fairly select part of the traveling population worldwide. And, you know,
what, you're not going to stay at the Four Seasons,
David? Most
people
will never be able to afford to even spend
what is
a night
it?
In a
500 bucks a night, probably.
Right, very expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's one argument for it. Now, I mean, the counter argument would be that, look, even with the incentives going towards the hotel, the property taxes, the other tax revenue you get from the hotel will offset that, and you have more money than in their budget to do other things that you might want to do with that. That's how you grow a tax base, and you grow a tax base, and that creates money to do other stuff.
Here's another tweet. Given the lack of confirmation from the Four Seasons, has anyone tried contacting them for information about this deal? That's why I think city officials and taxpayers are expressing skepticism. Even though Jaguars President Mark Lamping and others have said, look, this is going down, this is happening, we have yet to hear from the hotel chain itself. Is that right?
Right. That's correct. I mean, we've sent emails and tried to reach the Four Seasons corporate office, which is in Toronto, to get some response for them, have not been able to. I think other reporters with other outlets have done the same thing. So there's kind of this crickets from the Four Seasons itself in terms of what its plans are for Jacksonville. And usually what they do is when a hotel is being built in a new market, you know, they really pull out the stops, a lot of public fanfare. You know, certainly part of this Four Seasons hotel is residences. So you'd think they'd want to be out there beating the drums to get people to pre-purchase the residences and all that kind of thing. All that's part of your usual Four Seasons rollout. And we haven't seen that. Now, the development agreement requires what they call vertical constructions, where you actually start to see it go up out of the ground to start by September 1st. Presumably, by the time that comes around, the Four Seasons will have said something on it, or does it just keep kind of being, you know, it wouldn't make sense for them to build a hotel and have nothing from the Four Seasons at that point, hyping it and trying to get people interested in it.
Mark on the west side. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, this is just a theme. I'm so against this. It just irks me that, you know, here he is, one of the wealthiest men, not in Jacksonville, not in Florida, not in the United States, not in the Western Hemisphere, but in the world. And he's coming to the citizens of Jacksonville to help him out. And, you know, this, you know, two things you brought up. We keep hearing, oh, it's going to provide a lot of jobs. What kind of jobs? You know, these are, I can't imagine that the vast majority of these jobs that they keep talking about are minimum wage at best. And, you know, I think the city would do well just to write a check to people. And I'm just around the corner, and probably sooner rather than later, this is all going to be forgotten, because Shad Khan is going to want $1 billion for just one more little thing. I mean, is there ever a point where we say, you know, this isn't worth it? I mean, how many other businesses out there would love to get some of this money that the city just writes a check to this guy? And like I said, any day now, he's going to come up to us for, you know, hey, you gave us $149 million. What's a billion? You know, it's just, it's too much. It's too much, and it never stops. And, you know, we need something else.
All right, Mark. Getting lots of emails and tweets. One listener says the jobs will be generated for the construction and permanent jobs in the hotel and other amenities. Here's an email from Jim in Riverside. In fairness, this is not just about Conn or the Jaguars. This is the city. We gave money to FIS, to Dun and Bradstreet, to every developer who wants to build near downtown. I think it's legitimate to question the policy, but it's not fair to single out Shad Khan. Here's a comment on Facebook from Martin. The only way the Four Seasons is coming to town is if Shad Khan buys the company. They are all delusional. Shame on the city council. Okay, so is this a repeat of the whole Lot J situation where the taxpayers essentially revolt? They can't revolt. It's a done deal. But you're getting some of the same frustration, at least from some taxpayers out there about this deal.
It's not an exact repeat, because I know that in the case of the Lot J development, which was the one where they were going to take a parking lot near the stadium and build a hotel and big entertainment center and restaurants and stops and all that stuff, kind of like a mini Main Street downtown, that the return on investment there was like 40 cents for each dollar of incentive by the city. I mean, it was just woefully low in terms of what the city was getting back from that deal in terms of the return on investment. Here it's over a dollar, so it's different. That has helped, I think, get it through council without all the questions that the Lot J deal planned.
Let me jump in on that. Here's another comment from a listener. He says, and I want to get your reaction to this, David, increased tax flows equally offsetting the incentives does not represent a positive ROI. It's a negative ROI. The future tax inflows will be in discounted future dollars. In real dollars, this produces a negative net present value for these incentives.
Yeah, I'm not enough really an expert in how that works. I mean, the incentives are being paid out over a 20-year period, so I don't know if you discount them as well. I'm not sure how that would be done in terms of to what extent those are factored into it. It's a good question. I just don't know the answer to it, Melissa, in terms of how that's done.
Okay. Alex in Ponte Vedra. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, good morning. I just want to say that I moved here 3 years ago, and I love Jacksonville. I love the city. I love the people. But downtown is stuck in the past. I think it's time for us to go ahead and invest. I know it's not going to be cheap, but, it's time to make downtown a beautiful city. I mean, a beautiful downtown so we can bring talent and we can have something to do. And, yeah, it's going to bring a lot of jobs, maybe minimum wage, but it's still people need jobs. And that will improve the downtown, in my opinion.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, that's the pro argument.
It is a pro argument that, Four Seasons is a great addition to downtown. It'll bring people who otherwise would not come to Jacksonville. And it's a luxury brand that kind of symbolizes something about a downtown that's on the move. So that's the argument for it, without a doubt. The other question obviously is one of, let's just leave aside the property tax rebates, which are based on new revenue that you can argue the city wouldn't be getting. Mm-hmm. There's a $26 million completion grant. Is that the best use of $26 million given the challenges the city has? That's where the question is in terms of where you're spending your money. The $26 million, if you don't pay it, sounds like you don't get a Four Seasons. So there's the trade-off.
All of this discussion is happening, of course, in the lead-up to this weekend's game as the Jaguars are in the playoffs. So how much does a winning team give an owner like Khan some wind at his back to be able to go to the city and say, look, we're winning now. Cough up a little more money. Help us make this sports complex really rock.
Sure. I think it helps. You mentioned that polls show that most voters do not support anything for stadium renovations, which would be in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So having a winning team, I think, sort of generates excitement among not the hardcore fans, but the sort of, it's nice when the Jaguars win fans. So it's got to help. It certainly would help city council members to feel like they're not paying large amounts of money into a team that is losing all the time and has no interest in it doesn't hold the interest of fans or casual fans past December because they're already out of the playoffs. It's kind of been exciting around the city the last couple of weeks. And so does that mean that he can ask for more? Possibly.
One more tweet from William. It's amazing to me that Jacksonville can always find money for this, but they can't support family initiatives, community growth, and taking down statues. But yet they have millions for things the average person will not be able to afford. Where is the balance? So getting a lot of that feedback as well. But as you mentioned, in addition to the Four Seasons deal, the stadium improvements are moving ahead. They've announced they are looking to the next step in what they call the Stadium of the Future process. Mm-hmm. And that includes shade for some of the fans because it can get pretty hot and sunny sitting out there, and other improvements that the taxpayers will be footing at least part of the bill for, despite voter disapproval.
Yeah, well, there's going to be an election in the spring. Mayoral candidates, city council candidates. I think the next mayor and next city council are going to be deciding this. So it'll be one question that I'm sure people will be asked about on the campaign trail. Do you support it? If so, under what circumstances? You know, it's easy to say, yes, we would like to see the Jaguars extend their lease and stay here, but there's a cost involved with that. And so the election is the time to ask people about that.
Yeah, and they are coming up soon. In the meantime, always good to get your insights. David Bauerlein of the Florida Times-Union, thanks as always.
Of course, Melissa, great being here.
Speaking of the Jaguars, keep listening because later in the hour, Duval guitar hero Paul Wayne, playing his axe live here in studio, Paul will tell us about his viral fame after he played the national anthem at the Jaguars-Titans game. That's coming up later in the hour. But up next, Prince Harry's memoir, Spare, and how local veterans struggle to get mental health support after this. Welcome back. Well, Prince Harry's new memoir, Spare, is flying off the shelves. The English language version sold more than 1.4 million copies in its first day of publication. That breaks all records. It's the highest first day sales for a nonfiction book in history. Now, in the book, Harry, an Apache helicopter pilot who served in Afghanistan, writes movingly and at length about his mental health struggles and efforts to deal with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. A local executive and former head of a Jacksonville city agency says veterans and men of color especially struggle to get the mental health support they need, and they suffer from higher than average suicide rates. Jacksonville veteran and executive Joe Peppers joins us now in studio to talk about men, veterans, and mental health. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you? Thanks
Good to see you.
Me.
And let's hear from veterans out there. We're talking about military service, PTSD, getting access to mental health support. If you need that help or you just have thoughts, give us a call at 549-2937. The reason I mentioned the memoir Spares, I just thought it was timely, Joe, with you coming in today. I read the book and a full one third of the book deals with Prince Harry's military service, his trauma, his PTSD mm-hmm. that he suffered from after serving in Afghanistan, but also unresolved childhood trauma, losing his mother and all of that. And the thing I kind of took from it is, even if you're a really privileged person, you suffer just as much as anyone who's suffering from these kinds of problems. And there are millions of veterans out there who are suffering from PTSD and mental health challenges. And that included you, too.
Again, thanks for having me. My journey is deeply tied to childhood trauma, adolescent trauma, but also three tours to Iraq. And it is very difficult. It's a very difficult demographic to solve because veterans can be very stubborn and they do not like to talk about feelings. Feelings are bad. It's not okay to be afraid when you're in Iraq or Afghanistan. And quite honestly, I did not have the skills to assimilate back into society when I came home. And interestingly enough, one of the things that I found is many veterans have childhood trauma, and so they bring that into their service. It's very similar with first responders as well. And what happens is once you, PTSD has meaning. And so once I realize that I'm not safe and the world's not safe, then, you know, the suffering really, really starts to begin, and that can lead to suicide attempts. It can lead to addictions, and unfortunately suicide, ending in death. You know, sometimes it might take two or three attempts, but eventually it'll stick, and it's just really sad.
Veteran suicides are at epic levels in this region and nationally. There are local efforts to try to address veteran suicides. But for you in particular, how did you deal with your PTSD, and what prompted you to start on the mental health journey that you have been on?
Yeah. So initially, as a child, I grew up in Southside Chicago. I was abused as a child, and then had a very violent upbringing. And my twin brother eventually dropped out of school in high school. And then eventually I was able to get into West Point because I tested so well. And that whole time in my middle school, high school, and time at the academy, I was suffering from depression. I didn't even know what that was. I didn't know what that meant. And then 9/11 happened, and I lost a friend in 9/11. And I did three tours of Iraq. And before you know it, I was 30 years old, and I was getting out, and I was becoming a father, and I was on my third marriage, and I was hurting a lot of people. And, you know, it's really sad because what happens is you just end up hurting people that you love often. And by 2018, you know, 2017, I took this job with the city of Jacksonville.
Heading up the Kids Hope Alliance.
Kids Hope Alliance. And I thought that would fix it. I thought that, and honestly, people that struggle with PTSD or different mental health issues are very susceptible to cult-like behavior and leaders that have narcissistic traits. And coming into the city, I thought that was going to save me and help me. And my son had just, my third child had just had heart surgery. He was a week old, and I took the job, and I was so triggered by all of the kids that were hurting in the city, and I just couldn't deal. And I started to, I had an affair, and I knew that suicide was on the table. And around my 40th birthday, 2019, I realized that I was suicidal. And so, And then by April, I attempted suicide while I was at the Kids Hope Alliance. And eventually I went to rehab, and really sort of everybody knew, you know, that I had attempted suicide, and they knew that I had had an affair. But rehab wasn't enough. Honestly, like, it took me another 3.5 years to really do the work to get to the adolescent stuff, because it is like chopping a tree, and you have to take a lot of chops at it, and you have to be really willing to dig. And go in places that you don't want to talk about, you know.
I think it's hard for anyone to deal with unresolved trauma, grief, and loss from their childhood, which I think most people have. I have it. Mm-hmm. Most people I know. But I think it's especially hard for veterans and men, and maybe men of color like you. There are special barriers there. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So men generally are less likely to get help. But minority men, you know, particularly if you were raised on the heels of Jim Crow, you know, it's you know, very common narratives. You have to work twice as hard. You have to work three times as hard
to get half as far.
Right. Yeah. And so you're experiencing microaggressions that you don't really understand. Like, right. Like, and so in the 80s and 90s, you know, the things that we would say now that are politically incorrect, as we say, you know, like that was very common. So you would be called, you know, my father would say things like, don't be a little girl, you know, like, and this is not necessarily an indictment on him. And that was just sort of the way it was. And so minority males do not feel safe talking about their feelings. And, you know, similar to veterans, they don't really have representation in therapy. So there's not a lot of minority males that are therapists. And so what ultimately happens is you don't go. I was 40 years old when I finally sat in a therapist chair.
Were you able to find someone who looked like you to give you therapy?
No.
And
that, to this day.
That's hard. It's hard to, it might makes it harder to relate to the therapist.
Absolutely. Because if I'm a successful, whether or not I'm successful or not, if I'm a minority male dealing with anxiety and oppression, maybe I was sexually abused, I'm not going to tell anybody that. Men do not tell people if they were sexually abused. They don't say, hey, I experienced this thing when I was in Iraq and I can't explain it because it was so horrific that I can't explain it to you. So like, no, there's no one to tell that to.
There's so much shame that goes with, I think, veterans serving their country, often coming home injured physically and emotionally, and then feeling ashamed that they're struggling, and they shouldn't feel ashamed. Anybody would be struggling. So I think getting rid of that feeling of shame is important. And I say this as someone who, I have a number of male relatives who are veterans. Mm-hmm. My dad, my grandfather, mm-hmm. my uncles, my cousins. Like, I know this very well. So what's your advice to veterans and men out there, even if they're not veterans, and they know that they are struggling with mental health? What's your advice to them?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is you have to get help. Every day that you spend lying to yourself that you don't need help, that you're okay. This is sort of the first lie that a person that's dealing with deep, deep seated PTSD or anxiety, depression, I'm okay. I still got to go to work. You have to get help, because every day that you don't, you're going to be hurting your wife or your mom or your dad or your children. Every child you have, you're going to be hurting them. And, you know, at the end of the day, I had four children and I hurt my ex-wife deeply. I embarrassed her. And largely because I did not want to get help. And when I did ask for help, I was too stubborn to actually do the work. And, you know, that's really unfortunate. But, you know, for these men, like you know, if you're listening out there, you need to talk to someone. And it's hard work. Honestly, for veterans, it's really easy to muster physical courage. You know, like you think about this idea of charging a hill. It is difficult to muster the mental and emotional courage to talk about your problems every day and go to rehab for 30 days. Like, that's really hard. Like, that's the hardest work I've ever done.
But you're doing so much better, and I'm so glad to see it. Tell me how you're doing today.
Yeah, so I just returned from a second inpatient treatment, and, you know, I've been in a monogamous relationship for 6 months, and it has not been easy. I've definitely struggled with boundaries and learning how to be healthy, how to talk and be vulnerable. I deal deeply with shame. You know, shame is something that I deal with daily, and I'm constantly wrestling with feelings of inadequacy. And, you know, West Point, Bronze Star, you know, all of these things that I've done, you know, I still wrestle with shame. And I'm lucky to have someone in my life that's really supportive and that's really been helpful and helping me get through it. My kids are beautiful. I get to spend time with them all the time. I get to coach them in soccer. And, you know, my life is much different. I feel bad for the people I've hurt. If I can, I just apologize to the city of Jacksonville for some of the things that I did. You know, I wish I would have gotten help a lot earlier, but I'm so grateful.
And there are those who think some city officials might want to apologize to you too, but we won't go into that at this point.
They probably should, but
that's another story. But anyway, all of that said, it's good to see you, and I really appreciate you sharing your story, because I know it will help others, which is the whole point. And congrats on all the progress you've made, and thank you so much for being here. Joe Peppers, good to see you.
Thank you, you too.
Dozens of new restaurants are opening all over the region this year as the First Coast culinary scene keeps recovering from the pandemic. For more on that, I checked in with Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance.
Lee Court, good to see you. Happy New Year. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's been so long since we've talked about hospitality and the booming food industry and North Florida's passion for becoming one of the top dining and food and farm meccas.
That's right. So there is so much happening since we last spoke. Dozens of new restaurants opening. It's a culinary scene that has really taken a huge leap forward as we come out of the pandemic years. What are you seeing out there?
Well, I think because North Florida is comprised of so many different neighborhoods, and I think we're all passionate about the neighborhood that we live in. So whether you're in Duval County, St. John's, Clay, Baker, Nassau County, we support our local people. Mm-hmm. And dining is, it's thriving in each one of the neighborhoods and the communities. Mm-hmm. People do still love to get in their car and go check out something in a different neighborhood. But because we're all busy, we look forward to finding out who's still surviving in our own, you know, around the corner from us, or, you know, who's new and how do we keep it going? Yeah. And because we're in such a fantastic weather pattern, you know, whether you're dining indoors or outdoors, people really love dining outdoors every month of the year here. So I just see every neighborhood booming in its own way. But the big picture is the umbrella of North Florida. And I think our media really keeps us connected to each other so well that even if a restaurant has opened 25 minutes from your home and somebody mentions it, you just want to go and try it yourself.
And check it out. What are some openings you're most excited about?
Oh, my gosh.
Hard to narrow it down. There's a lot of them.
You know, it's really hard for me to mention anybody in particular. We've lived at the beach for such a long time, and that 40-mile island from Atlantic Beach to Volano is it's just a playground for people who love the beach and innovation. So there are new restaurants coming to Volano Beach, and Atlantic Beach is always just park your car, get out, and taste. Mm-hmm. So in particular restaurants, I'm not going to recommend anyone because sometimes they're politically correct and sometimes they're politically not. So, I just like to keep it regionally powerful and passionate about the chefs, the staff. I think there's a whole new renaissance of people who are moving here and bring a work ethic with them to be able to staff our dining spots.
Let's talk about that. In the pandemic, so many people came here from other locales. A lot of them could work remotely, and that in part is fueling this restaurant boom. And so what are diners demanding now in restaurants? What are some of the trends that you're seeing in the culinary world?
I think diners today really appreciate the personal touch of restaurants today. When a restaurant staffs somebody at the hostess or the host desk, I think that's a major piece of today's success, that they're aware of what's going on in their establishment. They're aware of the reservations that are made. They're aware of their repeat guests. And I see that happening a lot.
You also, through the Women's Food Alliance, are really plugged into the hospitality world, and that has rebounded in a big way, too.
Oh, my gosh. I think people are feeling powerful in innovation. I think the entrepreneur who had an idea a few years ago and didn't have the time to build it or dream it has taken the time to make it happen. Mm-hmm. whether it's somebody who's a farmer and a company opens to be able to personally distribute great from the farm products, to people who own oceanfront homes and rent them out for accommodations, but also for parties. One of our members owns a few St. John's County properties that aren't just there for guests to come and stay overnight with their families, but the property is there for an afternoon tea or a small wedding. So hospitality is very unique today. It's out of the box thinking and out of the box projects.
Now, you also mentioned the farm to table movement and all of the local makers and artisans and people producing food and drinks and products that are ending up on local tables. That's growing a lot too.
Well, we live in a very rich farm area. So even though it may not be around the corner from our home, they're not far. And we cherish the produce that's grown in our area and and try to incorporate it into creative cooking at home, gift giving. I know I love giving the gift of a flat of microgreens from Gio Greens in Ponte Vedra. So I think the whole culinary scene is not just in restaurants, but we're watching food being made online. How fun is that? And somebody's inspiring innovation just in our own kitchens, too.
Now, with all of the new places opening, some beloved old standbys last year closed. So what are your thoughts about people that, you know, they mourn the closure of a place they used to always love to go, even as they're maybe checking out some of the new places?
I think mourning it is very brief. You enjoy talking about it and bringing it back to life with friends that you may have gone with. So it's never really out of your heart and soul. It's just not there today. And if you stay in touch with what is happening through social media and our hardcore media, our radio and TV and print, we find out what's going on.
And we'll continue to cover the culinary scene here on the show and also online at wjctnews.org. Here's to happy drinking and dining all through the year with Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Melissa, cheers.
Cheers, everyone. And still to come, the Duval guitar hero who's gone viral as he plays the national anthem live here in studio. We'll check in with Paul Wayne of Duval County Line next.
Expert Glassworks, a mobile auto glass repair and replacement service based in Jacksonville and serving Northeast Florida. Operators are available weekdays from 8 to 5. Learn more at expertglassworks.com or 655-0265. Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com.
Thank you. Israel is moving to the far right. Ultra-Orthodox and ultra-nationalist parties formed a coalition government with recently re-elected Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. What does that mean for Israelis, Palestinians, Ukraine, and the U.S.? We'll talk with Israeli journalist Anshul Pfeffer, author of a biography of Netanyahu. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Marches are being organized to mark what would have been the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade later this month. And fresh off winning their decades-long battle to overturn Roe, abortion rights opponents are pinpointing their next target, the nation's biggest pharmacy chains. Next time on 1A, the over-the-counter clash and the fight ahead for reproductive rights in America.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Local musician Paul Wayne has had one heck of a week. He's become a viral sensation since he shredded the national anthem at last Saturday's primetime Jaguars game as they beat the Tennessee Titans and headed into the playoffs. We're so excited. Paul is here in studio now to tell us all about the experience, his band Duval County Line, and his charity Guitars for Kids. Hey, Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
And congratulations. This is so exciting for you.
Thank you. It's been a whirlwind, really.
I can only imagine. Now, you took the stage, you took the field, I should say, in front of an audience of millions last week to play the national anthem. And what was that like for you? Because the crowd went nuts.
Yeah. It was, you know, we did the rehearsal the Friday before, and it was the loudest I'd ever heard my guitar play, you know. So I was already kind of excited about that.
Was really
ready to do it again. I was a little nervous, but it was really just the excitement of getting to do it. I got to stand on the stage or out on the field for a few minutes before I began to play with a packed house like that, and just look around and see all the faces in the that was wow. That
yeah.
was just wow.
Yeah. And loved ones cheering you on in the stands too, right?
Yeah, my mother was standing on the sideline. Hi, Mom. And my Uncle Chet, who gave me my first guitar when I was 8 years old, we were able to get him here from Abilene, Texas, to get he stood on the sidelines. My beautiful Lisa was standing there on the sidelines.
She's watching from outside the studio. Yeah. Hey, Lisa. Okay, so then, as exciting as it was in Jacksonville, then you went viral. Everyone all over the country, even the world, was celebrating you just ripping the national anthem.
It's a regular part of our show, my band Duval County Line. We always try to honor, you know, our great nation and be grateful, you know, pay the rent we owe for being on the planet and try to be kind to people. And I think it's important to keep the patriotic spirit in the room with you when you're trying to have fun.
Tell us about your band, Duval County Line.
Great group of guys. We got Jacob Smart on the drums. Travis Bryan on lead rhythm guitars and vocals, Mr. Mike Hamm, the Hammer, on bass and vocals, and of course myself.
And of course yourself. You are performing tonight, you and Duval County Line, at the Howlin' Wolf in Putnam Hall.
But
when you're not performing, you run a foundation called Guitars for Kids. You've given hundreds of instruments to kids. And I would think after going viral after the game, you're going to be able to give even more.
Yeah, that's picked up quite a bit. Like I said, my Uncle Chet gave me my first guitar when I was 8, and it just kind of ingrained, you know, I just thought that's how you get guitars. Someone has to give them one. So I've been doing it my whole life. But the foundation just really started because my Lisa's a genius. And she helped you start it. She saw the potential to make it into a foundation. Yeah.
What do you love about the guitar?
Everything. It saved my life. God saved my life with a guitar.
Music is therapy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's so true.
You bet.
Well, we are so excited because Paul Wayne is going to give us a repeat of his epic performance at TIAA Bank Field. So here he is, Paul Wayne of Duval County Line, performing the national anthem. Thank you. That's Paul Wayne of the Duval County Line. Go see him and his band tonight at Howlin' Wolf in Putnam Hall. That was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I'm just thrilled. And by the way, Paul's guitar and even the guitar strap have the American flag on them.
Could I mention the guitar real quick?
Sure.
Okay, this is a custom Jay Murphy guitar. And it's a one of a kind. It's absolutely perfect. It's a Cadillac of guitars, and I just want to give him a shout out. Jay Murphy Custom Guitars, Keystone Heights, Florida.
Awesome. Thank you, Paul. Thanks for the music. And have fun at the show tonight.
Thank you. I will. Thanks for having me, guys.
And we'll post a little video of that performance a little later today. In the meantime, go Jags. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Make it a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.